So welcome, ladies. It's really exciting to be here at the 24th floor in City Social. Last time we had a conversation, we were at the 40th floor of the Gherkin. Was it the 40th?
It was
quite high up.
We like views.
We do like views. We like hanging out in good places and having good conversations, don't we? So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Gemma Greaves and I'm the Chief Exec of the Marketing Society. And we have just finished a really brilliant lunch with some fantastic people around the table discussing things that matter, which is very much in both of our DNA, isn't it, Tamara? You know, the society does everything through a brave lens and likes to have conversations that matter across our global network and create those safe spaces to be able to do so. So together we can help each other be even better. And you're very much the same, aren't you? And maybe just introduce yourself as well.
Yes, of course. So I'm Tamara Littleton. I'm the CEO and founder of The Social Element, a social media that's been around for 17 years, believe it or not, and also the co-founder of a company called Polpio, which is a crisis simulation software company. And yeah, I agree, we've had the most amazing lunch. We've had some incredible people, some very candid conversations, and it's been fascinating to hear where everyone's coming from in terms of inclusivity. Well-being was a big subject that came up. Loving the lunch we've just had.
So before we talk about that and before we introduce our other guests, 17 years, did you invent social media?
Thank you for asking that, Gemma. I do have a bit of a running joke. It's very sweet. My dad, who's now 85, actually said to me, but of course, Tamara, you invented social media, didn't you? And I literally have not had the heart to tell him that I didn't actually invent social media, although sometimes I pretend I did.
Friends with Mark Zuckerberg or any of the others?
Well, to be honest, you know, Facebook came out after I'd invented my company, so I think he was heavily influenced by what I was doing in the early days.
I love that. And also joining us, we have Jess and Emma. Jess, you are currently at RBS in a really interesting role.
I'm Jess Myers. I'm currently at RBS. My role is to lead the brand team for RBS, but by the time this podcast goes live, I will have left RBS. So for today's purposes, my views are my own. It's been wonderful to be here. I had such an exciting conversation over lunch today, and thank you for welcoming me to the podcast as well.
Oh, thank you. And Emma, tell us who you are. You have many hats, don't you?
For today, I am I'm Emma Harris. I am the CMO of The Social Element. I also run my own business called Glow London, which is a brand consultancy.
Lovely. And also, you have been a client for many years as well.
So I was.
Today, the conversation around brands, where we're really talking about things that matter within our organisations, particularly focused on inclusion, diversity and well-being. Obviously, with your experience at Eurostar and Virgin and others, I'm assuming that really resonated, particularly around leadership.
Absolutely. I think one of the lessons we had at Eurostar, we had people often think of diversity as gender or sexuality, but our diversity was about having a business that was owned in three countries. So we constantly had a cultural diversity of French, Belgium and British, which when you look at the idiosyncrasies of those three cultures, you'd never dream in a million years to build a business built of all three. But today has been a brilliant conversation. Everyone's been very honest about the challenges, both from a cultural perspective, internally, how you bring the right people into the business without quotas or forcing, and also from a brand point of view, how you do marketing that's genuinely, authentically diverse without, again, forcing it. It's been a really brilliant, honest conversation.
And also the challenges we all have as well, because, you know, they are plenty, and particularly at the moment when there is a lot of uncertainty happening. And we talked a lot about trust today, didn't we? And trust with our employees and with our teams. And I'd particularly like to pick up with you, Tamara. You talked about the journey from the beginning in terms of, maybe almost by accident, the way you created a culture within The Social Element. If you'd like to just... tell us a bit more.
I think it was really interesting, having sort of created a company that was remote from day one. It did bring in a certain level of cultural diversity, but also gender diversity from the people who were applying for jobs in the early days when I started. I think the remote model was very new.
But why did you have the remote model?
So I shared with the group today that the truth was is that I had no money. I had like a 10 grand investment from my parents, which went very quickly, and I had some redundancy money, so I couldn't afford offices. So I basically started it with a remote model. But it was also because that wasn't scary for me. I used to work at the BBC where everyone was talking using internet relay chat, for the people old enough to remember what that was. So that whole model of you know, hiring people, working from home, wasn't new for me, but it was new for the industry. And in the beginning, I actually had to sort of, I didn't promote it as a USP. It was almost something that I would talk about if asked, but I wasn't shouting it from the rooftops, shall I say. Now, obviously, it's become a big thing, to the point where I have agency leaders wanting to take me out to coffee to find out how I'm running the agency with a model where we have 300 people working from home with amazing cultural diversity and all sorts of different diversity as well. It is the model of the future. I would say that, but I'm very passionate about it.
Coffee, they should be taking you out for expensive lunches. Yeah. Especially the agencies, wonder how much money they've got. Moving on, from a client perspective, you said something really interesting. Well, you said many interesting things over lunch. But particularly in terms of RBS and the culture around flexible working and having to book your desks.
Yeah, well, speaking from my own personal experience, I think talking generally around work-life balance and managing that, the first time I came back to work from maternity leave, I wasn't really given the choice other than come back full-time or not come back. The second time I came back, I was lucky enough to work for RBS, who I asked for some flexible working arrangements, and they had no question in approving it. So a wonderful culture of embracing flexible working. And there was no question around what hours are you going to be doing, sat at your desk. We were measured on output and getting your job done. So that was a wonderful culture to have embedded across the organisation, and one that I've really thrived in. And you know, you can see the general culture moving towards flexible working arrangements. So specifically where I am right now, we do not have one desk per person. We all hot desk, we book our desks, which means that we get to sit next to lots of different people and have really stimulating conversations. It also means that we have the flexibility to work from the office, remotely from a different office, or from home as well, which really fosters this environment of collaboration, but also knowing that I know what I need to do to get my job done. My manager trusts me to do so, which is a wonderful environment to be working in.
Lovely. You talked about two things there, output and trust. Yeah. And we touched on that a lot today. So talking about flexible working, talking about remote working.
Yeah.
There was actually, I think it's fair to say, mixed views around the table. Just trying to get the background noise down there because we are in a restaurant. Mixed views around the table in terms of, and it very much comes from leaders as well, where leaders, you know, there was a sense of it's a Friday and no one's in the office, and actually that's a bad thing, or as you would say tomorrow, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And we started talking about actually it's not about the hours people are putting in, but actually it's about outputs.
Yeah.
And it's about having that trust with people. And there was a bit of a mixed view around that.
There was a question around, you know, some people are, I think the quote was, early birds were you night owls, and actually some people get the best out of their working because I feel more motivated in the morning, or perhaps I feel more motivated in the evening. But actually, whether I decide to work 9 to 5 or I'm working 7 to 7 or whether I'm working flexibly, actually it's about trusting your teams to deliver the outputs and to work to the best of their ability and making the most of being your best version of yourself to work, no matter what that looks like, and trusting our teams and trusting that they will do work to the best of their abilities.
And isn't that the most incredible thing, that sort of being trusted? So I think it's one thing for leaders to say, you know, I trust people, and that's what's going to sort of help things in terms of sort of flexible working and outputs. But, you know, looking back to you know, my early career, I've created an agency that I would want to work in.
Yeah.
And I know that when I was trusted by previous bosses, they got the best out of me. It empowers you to drive forward and be, you know, creative and entrepreneurial. So I think it's, you know, trust is not something that you have. I mean, it's one of those things that if you kind of create an environment where trust comes first, people will go the extra mile, they will do more, and you just get the best work out of everybody.
It comes onto your T-shirt. Tamara, because obviously we're on a podcast, can't see visually, is wearing a grey T-shirt. We'll have to get a picture to accompany the podcast. Be a nice human. And you absolutely fundamentally believe that. It's about being kind.
It is about being kind. And I think there are so many different ways of being a leader and, you know, creating an environment. But I think sometimes, I've been in this industry for a long, long time, and there are all these outside influences around the kind of leadership that gets ahead, you know, very strong in terms of like aggressive leadership, you know, really sort of dominant and lacking perhaps sort of empathy and kindness. And I've been
maybe
trying
democracy.
I've been trying to sort of forge my own path, I suppose. In fact, it's not my own path at all. I mean, people like Mary Portas has been talking about this for years. She's the most incredible leader, that actually it is possible to be kind, to be brave, to be empathetic, to be inclusive, and be a successful leader.
Lovely. And one of the things that, you know, we're very passionate about at the Marketing Society and through our Brave Agenda is it starts with being yourself and being your true self. And sometimes that's not easy, especially in corporate environments. And one of the things we touched on today was well-being. And part of well-being is being able to be all of you when you're at work, being able to feel like you're in a safe space when you're at work or wherever you are. You know, one of the things that, you know, we've talked about a lot, you know, and Ruby Wax did a brilliant event for us where we were talking about, you know, our mental health, because we all have we all have physical health, we all have mental health, and we need to look after it more, and there's not enough of that in the workplace. And we actually touched on that today with one of our members from Hiscox, talking about sponsoring a program within Hiscox to help with mental health. Ruby Wax said it's okay not to be okay. How do you encourage that within the organisations that you work in, that culture of being able to truly be yourself?
I think from a leadership point of view, it's all about showing vulnerability. And I think we've grown up in a culture in sort of the 90s, those of us that are older than us remember that, where you had to hide that, where it was all about wearing a corporate mask and showing vulnerability was weakness and people would take advantage. And we're lucky enough now to be leaders that can actually, when you show vulnerability, going back to the trust thing, people trust you. Because there's so much evidence that if you're too perfect as a leader, if you're doing that first in, last out, never show that you're stressed or scared, people aren't going to trust. People always feel intimidated, so they can't relate to you. They won't feel ambitious because they'll think they're never going to be you. And they won't trust you. And we're lucky enough to be in an environment now where actually leadership is about being real and being authentic and connecting with people. That doesn't mean, you know, jumping on a bar at 10 o'clock in the morning drinking tequila, although I'm sure we've all done that. Or is it just me?
Speak for yourself.
Just me. But, you know, it's just about being, you know, being a human. I talk about my kids all the time. I talk about when I'm, you know, my dad just passed away. I did a big blog on LinkedIn about that. Going to get emotional. But, you know, it's the more real and vulnerable you are, exactly, the more the people will trust you, and you'll be encouraging that in other people, and that's healthy.
And that's just reminding me of Brené Brown, who's, I'm sure we've all heard her TED talk. She's amazing. And she talks about that, actually, you know, the strongest trait in leadership is vulnerability, because you cannot be courageous without showing vulnerability, emotional exposure, risk and uncertainty. But for some reason, in leadership, you see very many different styles and not often vulnerability. And vulnerability can be seen as a weakness, but it shouldn't be, should it? I mean, in a business.
I think that we've moved on culturally so significantly from that original version of the perfect leader, which was in the suit and being absolutely perfect and just showing white and black without the shades of grey in the middle. And in fact, to be an authentic leader, you need to bring your full self to work and to open up to things that excite you and the things that terrify you. And I think that's really motivating for your team when they see that you might be somebody who's trying to juggle being being a parent and being working, and actually you might stand up in front of an audience and present beautifully, but inside you're terrified when you're doing it, because that makes it okay, because actually it's normal. for everyone to go through different challenges and have different strengths. And that's what makes a wonderful team, is that you're all made up of different people with different passions and different motivations. And the strongest team are the most diverse of the teams. I think we've come such a long way in celebrating what makes a great team, and actually what makes a great leader is having so many sides to you which you're happy to showcase, because it means that you can connect with your team in a much more meaningful way on many different levels.
See, I do agree with that, but I do think there's still a lot of leaders
lot
that do not still a big way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the American government, you know, and you know, let's not touch on that, but you know,
yeah,
and
the leader of the American
to be clear, the current leader of the American government, but also a lot of corporates as well. You know, we've had some stories today where that what you just said around the shades of grey,
yeah,
it's still quite black and white.
Absolutely.
In some companies. So we're on our way, but we've got a long way to go, and that's
journey.
Why it's
yeah.
so important we have these conversations. But you talked about diversity of teams
yeah.
Just then, and one of the things we picked up on today a lot was diversity from a point of view of background across you know, gender, race,
age,
thought,
sexuality. Absolutely, but I want to talk particularly about thought, actually. It's so important, and then, you know, McKinsey, you know, evidence, if you have diverse teams, you will have better results. So it leads to better financial results, and sometimes you need to speak the language in that sense. But diversity of thought is so important, isn't it? Isn't it, Tamara?
At the Social Element, it's something that we're really passionate about, and we brought in something called DISC training a few years back that seems to have, it's become our mantra. For those who don't know about it, it's for a guy called Patrick Lencioni, who wrote a great book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which is, I read the manga version, which is easier to read, it's a bit more cartoon for the people, the leaders on the go, shall we say.
me.
All of us. Can read it in a
multitasking checklist.
You can read it in an afternoon. It's so powerful because it's all about the sort of pyramid around sort of trust and accountability. And but the DISC training divides people up into different personality types. I'm sure people don't necessarily want to be put into personality types, but that's the way it is. The reality is that you get people who are perhaps more dominant, the Ds, you have the Is, where they're the more sort of the unicorns and the optimistic, you know, the people, the extroverts. You have the S types, which are more around team building, nurturing, caring, and the Cs, who are very process and data focused. And sometimes, you know, people don't always see eye to eye with their opposite personality types. So we have taken this and used it as an internal language, that it's okay that, for example, in our exec team, we all know exactly which DISC types we have diversity of DISC types in the executive team. We may be mainly female, and I'm trying to sort of change that over the time, but we do have diversity in our personalities. And it means that, for example, if we're making a big decision, that it's okay for the S's in the room to say, do you know what, I need 24 hours. I'm not going to make a decision right here, right now. And sometimes the D types can overpower. So the fact that we all understand this and know this, and it really is helpful in things like conflict training, and, you know, just being better with our clients is understanding their personality. So I realise that's not necessarily... you know, it doesn't cover things like neurodiversity, but it feels like it's important to have a language and a starting point to be open about that, celebrating our differences.
Absolutely. Our differences are our superpowers. Mm-hmm. And I love that, and I think having that language, and I think it's important to also, the more you understand, the more self-aware you are, and the more you can help get the best out of yourself, but also the best out of others, and that's what teams are all about, and obviously leadership as well. So we're coming to an end. I've been told time's up, annoyingly. I think the restaurant is trying to get in here to clear the room. I know, the glamour. Well, it is quite glamorous,
it's
actually
very
here.
Very glamorous.
Yeah.
Lucky and privileged.
I have done podcasts where we've pretended we're in really glamorous locations, but we're actually in a tiny office. Whereas actually today,
we are.
We will take some pictures.
Wine glasses.
And we are. So I would just like to finish. We started the dinner with a side of a tweet. You know, another social media leader, not quite you, because I think you started before tomorrow. But in the side of a tweet, what do you think we can do today, not tomorrow, what do you think we can do today differently, or you know, to make a difference, differently to make a difference. But we're talking about things that matter. So what can we do to make change? What would be your one thing, given that you're, and I'm going to start with you, Tamara, you know, you're a leader of an incredibly successful business and you've brought such a diverse and brilliant culture, and I've met so many of your team and it has a brilliant feel. That's why we love being partners with you guys. What is it you think we could do today to make a difference?
In the start of a tweet, I will do a hashtag. So I would say, it's a long one, probably have some capitals. It would be hashtag vulnerability equals inclusion. Because I think just picking up on what was said earlier, if we are more vulnerable, if we are happy to show our authentic selves, it does create an inclusive environment. It's not all about just sort of, you know, how do you get diverse teams? How do you keep diverse teams? Mm. And inclusivity is everything.
Lovely. That's so nice. Okay. Follow that.
That's a tough act to follow.
Yes.
I'll get mine over and done with it. So I would say my team are rock stars. My role is to encourage them to bring their best self to work every day.
Love that.
Hashtag rock stars.
Hashtag best team ever.
I mean, I would talk about just recognise you have a choice. You have a choice in everything. You have a choice in who you want to be. You have a choice in how you lead your team. You have a choice in how you look after yourself and your mental health and your well-being. And, yeah, hashtag take, you know,
hashtag choose. There we go.
Hashtag George Michael. Choose life.
Hashtag choose life.
Your choice. And I think we should finish with hashtag be you.
I love it.
And maybe hashtag be brave, because we've
definitely be brave.
Well,
definitely
thank you brave. So much for taking
thank
part.
You. Thank you.
I know this won't be the last time we have a conversation, and I think what we've got to talk about now is what we're going to talk about in the next conversation to really move this further, so as an industry we can help each other to inspire change, which is ultimately what we're here to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.